I've been frightened before, but not like this. It's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast for ex-convicts. Some have called him simple-minded. Here is Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. This is your old buddy, Uncle Doug. As my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, would say, it is Doug Jones, your Medicare expert. And I'm here to help you feel good about that transition that most of us are going to have to endure to move from health insurance provided under Obamacare to health insurance provided under Medicare. Why is that going to happen? It's going to happen because we get old. But nowadays, I don't think 65 is as old as it used to be. So frankly, those of us who are 65 and contemplating that transition to Medicare should not concern themselves with being decrepit. What you do is you go to bookstore, you go to Amazon.com, you go to BarnesandNoble.com, you buy Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023. You take that home. Well, actually, you don't go to the store, you order it. When they deliver it to you, you're going to have a synopsis of what Medicare is all about that would put to shame any printed material that was provided to our ancestors. Back when Medicare was first invented back in the 1960s, it was difficult for people to understand. But nowadays, you've got Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023, and you will have the knowledge that most people only dream about, the Medicare expertise that only a few are so fortunate to have. So having had the wisdom to buy that book and to read it, you probably will also have the wisdom to contact me when you're approaching your Medicare transformation, your Medicare portal, the portal that brings you into the world of Medicare. Because when you're approaching that portal, you're going to need some additional insurance, not just the Medicare, but you're going to need some insurance to cover the holes and the gaps in Medicare. And I am expert in providing that for people, and I'm going to be happy to provide that for you. Very reasonable cost. And then you'll go out the other side into the land of Medicare full of happiness and joy. And I'm going to take credit for that. I'll be responsible for your well-being. In the meantime, I often like to discuss these kinds of things with my friend Randy Carson, and surprisingly enough, he still talks to me. I mean, who would want to talk about Medicare as often as I make Randy talk about it? Hey, Randy, how are things today?
Hey, I am better than a poke in the eye.
With what would that poke? Yep.
With a sharp stick.
Ah. Well, good for you. Good for you.
Actually, you also... I'm great. I'm absolutely great. I feel great. I have absolutely no problem saying that I am. If I get any better, yep, it's going to be illegal.
Well, I don't want to have us go down that road, but I would like to find out if you've got a Medicare question for me, as you so often do during these recordings.
Oh, yes, I do. I've got one cooked up, and it's waiting.
Okay.
And this is going to be a tough one. So, you know.
They're all brain twisters.
Take a drink of your soda.
I do need that. My throat's acting up.
Or if you're from Illinois, it's pop. In case you don't know, is Illinois soda?
I'm a proud stockholder. For me, it's Coke. Doesn't matter what it is. It's Coca-Cola.
Okay. All right. So, but if you weren't a proud stockholder of Coke, would it be pop or soda?
I think it'd be soda.
Soda.
In Illinois,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. Nebraska, it's pop.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you
so
know,
anyway,
I'm always brand specific.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I am too, for the most part. But here we go. Are you ready, Dad?
All right. I'm ready.
Take a breath. This is question number 11 from our highly placed person in the organization that curates all this sort of stuff. Question number 11, does Medicare cover prescription medications?
No. Well, actually, it kind of does. See, all of these questions have a short answer that's inaccurate and a longer verbose answer. And that helps us burn up a lot of the episode time. But here's the deal. Medicare only covers prescription medications if you are in the hospital, the nursing home, a rehab place, or hospice, I guess. Otherwise, Medicare itself does not cover any prescription medications, but you are encouraged to purchase a Medicare drug plan. A Medicare Part D prescription drug plan is available everywhere in the U.S., and in fact, in most places in the U.S., there are somewhere between 20 and 25 of these drug plans available. So how do you know which one to buy? Do not listen to a salesman who works for one of the insurance companies that puts these drug plans out. Do not listen to what your buddy did. Do not listen to what your wife did. Call me, or basically email me, and I will search the government database to find the plan in your area that will do the best job for the least amount of money, and that plan will be the best decision for you until maybe the following year. And then maybe the price will go wacky, maybe your drug needs will change, and that search would have to be done again. So it can be done more than once, but basically every year at the maximum. Now, what do you need to tell the person who's going to do that search, which most likely would be me? You need to tell me what drugs you take and how often you refill them and all that. You need to tell me what drugstores you prefer to do your prescription refills at, and does that include a mail order? And then I need to know where you are in the country. With those facts, I can find the Part D prescription drug plan that is the only way to get Medicare to cover your drugs when you're not institutionalized. So I hope that explains it. I hope that clarified things, Randy.
It absolutely does. But there's one thing I wanted to mention that, not because you didn't cover it, it's because it's such a surprise to me. And a lot of people think the way I do, unfortunately. But, you know, bottom line is, if you have a particular list of drugs that is covered by the least expensive plan in the world for Part D, that's fine. Yep. Getting a more expensive Part D doesn't do you a bit of good.
You are exactly right. It's not like there's quality. You get what you pay for. In this case, you buy the suit that fits you the best in the whole store, and that may not be the most expensive suit. The one that fits you the best, the one that works for you, may be on the cheaper side, and there's no advantage to be gained by buying a suit that costs $50 more, because, frankly, it might protect you from other stuff that you'll never need to be protected from.
Right. And I find that's something that I have to remind myself of regularly, not only on Part D conversations, but bottom line, I have to remember that all the time for various different reasons. But I just thought it would be worth mentioning in case there's people on the podcast that think like I do. If you can buy it for 10, but if you can buy it for 60, it must be better.
Yeah, and that's a very, very good point to make. I've had people ask me that. Well, that plan is too cheap. I don't mind kicking in another 10 or 20 bucks a month to make sure that I don't have a problem down the road. Well, frankly, unless you have a crystal ball and you can predict what kind of drug your next illness is going to cause you to need, there's no way to accurately spend more money and have a better plan ready for you. Just won't happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I just thought poke that into the podcast.
Oh, there'll be a little something extra in your paycheck this week, because that
thank
was
you,
good.
Thank you.
Very
I
good.
Appreciate
point.
It. I appreciate it.
Don't spell your name, please. okay. What floated to the top of my curated content here is something I don't know what the curator is trying to tell me by having this particular article float to the top of the pile, but it's an article about niche retirement communities. And the question in the headline is, are they right for you? So let me tear into this article a little bit. A niche retirement community could be anything from RV enthusiasts to Jimmy Buffett fans to yogis. There's a niche retirement community for almost everyone. And then it says here, moving famously like a pig and a python. Well, in my books, I refer to a fat rat passing through a snake. But they're talking about the boomers, the baby boomers, the people born between 1946 and 1964. For 70 plus years, they've been shaping consumer goods and services since they were in onesies. I don't think I ever wore a onesie. Anyway, now history's most influential generation is fueling the growth of the next logical sector of the next logical financial sector, the niche retirement community. They are exactly what they sound like. They're residential developments in urban, suburban, or even seafaring form designed to appeal to narrowly cast affinity groups from Jimmy Buffett fans to yoga practitioners. And they come in almost every type of senior accommodation. I hate the word senior. From active to independent to assisted living through continuing care. Niche projects account for a small percentage of the nation's 50,000 or so senior communities and facilities, but they are the segment to watch. There are 5 to 6 dozen university-based retirement communities for retirees who want to return to the student and academic life. There are some 2 dozen properties focused on gay seniors. There are retirement communities for retired postal workers, equestrians, environmentalists, RV enthusiasts, and Parrothead fans. They keep mentioning Jimmy Buffett. I don't know. I should have counted how many times Jimmy Buffett is mentioned in this article. Even Disney is getting in on the action. It's about to launch a thing called Story Living, a planned community in California for the next chapter of your life that includes a 55-plus neighborhood. In November of 2017, when Jimmy Buffett announced his first Latitude Margaritaville in Daytona Beach, Florida, an active living property for people 55 and better, more than 150 fans and other lovers of the flip-flop life camped out overnight at the sales office for first dibs on 300 properties. Today, Latitude Daytona Beach, a planned community of 7,000 people, there's a waiting list for homes under construction. There's another Latitude in the Florida Panhandle, one in North Carolina, and 2 or 3 planned for Texas. In 2016, when the Delaware-based Kendall Corporation announced Enzo Village, a life plan community devoted to Zen tradition, and this is in Northern California's wine company, almost 1,200 people put down $1,000 each for a priority reservation. When the 275 units went on the market in 2020, they sold out in 4 months. Kendall is now developing a second Enzo Village in Southern California. Nalanda Estates near Sarasota, Florida, which describes itself as an active Indian retirement community of 83 homes, states on its website it is sold out. Now, I'm guessing that those would be your 7-Eleven Indians, not your casino Indians. That would be my guess. Florida's The Villages, renowned as a hotbed of conservative politics and libertine social lives, has sold some 70,000 houses. A developer could open a Grateful Dead community and fill it quickly, a real estate agent said. I can virtually guarantee it. Sheer numbers dictate that simply there simply could never be a one-size-fits-all answer to the baby boomers' retirement years. They account for a fifth of the country's population. That's 73 million people looking for places that reflect their personal preferences. For developers, that equals a lot of niches, and a lot of niches that are both sizable and scalable, especially as the traditional 55-plus active community of golf, tennis, and clubhouses matures. The old model was very leisure-centered. Let's see. This is a person who is director of lifelong university engagement at Arizona State. But she says people can't kicked golf for 30 years. I believe there are some people who would disagree with that. Anyway, niche retirement communities, of course, are not for everybody. Most people's preference is still to age at home. Niche properties can also be pricey and geographically inconvenient, since finding one that aligns with your exact interests may mean moving far from your family. But perhaps the most powerful impediment is attitudinal. The idea of living in a retirement city doesn't appeal to me, said Nancy Farkas, a 60-something derivatives lawyer in New York City. She's weighing her retirement options. I don't want to be in a place that's only old people. Her first choice right now, the MV Narrative. That's M as in Martin, V as in Victor, Narrative, a luxury residential yacht scheduled to launch in 2025 and then sail from port to port on a year-round basis. I just want to mix things up and keep it interesting, says Farkas. The senior living landscape has been fragmenting almost as long as it's been in existence. Starting in the 1950s, residential builders began developing age-restricted communities for active adults, such as Del Webb, Sun City, Arizona, where 55-plus homeowners could live in self-contained communities with resort-style amenities. By the 1990s, university-based retirement communities had started popping up, allowing retirees to live in or on campuses, college campuses, and a sprinkling of other special interest communities followed. When Arnold Victor, a retired pediatrician, moved to Sun City in Northern California a decade ago, it seemed to offer everything he needed. As a recent widower, he would have a built-in social life, resort-style amenities at his fingertips, clubs, trips, and more. After 10 years of having to drive everywhere and feeling cut off from the outside world and worried his cognitive abilities were declining, Victor began looking into continuing care. In 2021, once he stepped foot inside the Mirabella at ASU, that's Arizona State University, a 20-story luxury apartment building on the campus, he knew he had found his new home. He wanted to say, oh yeah, this is the place. In the 2 years since moving in, he's taken classes. Okay, this is a little far-fetched. He's taken classes in art and philosophy. He participates in a mentoring program for pre-med students, attends concerts, lectures, and movie nights. One favorite part of his day is dinner time, when instead of discussing the way things used to be, medications, aches, and pains, as he did in Sun City, we're talking about what we're going to do next, what concert we're going to go to, what lecture, what classes we're going to take. Now, I don't know about Randy, but I remember my college days fondly, but I'm not anxious to go back and recreate them at this stage of my life. And I can only think of two reasons that people would do this. Either they loved college so much and they want to recreate the experience and wallow in it, or they felt like they could have done it better and they want to go back and correct the errors that they made when they were youthful and footloose and fancy free. So there is a contrast to Victor. This woman named Mary Van Dyke wanted a community of like-minded spiritual souls, although she wasn't exactly sure what that looked like. What the 75-year-old widow from San Mateo, California, did know was that between the isolation of the panic and the wildfires filling California's skies with smoke, she no longer wanted to live alone. She began touring active living developments looking for chemistry. Instead, she mostly found a country club feel and lack of intention. When Van Dyke would ask administrators about one of her priorities, a meditation group, they said they would start one, she recalls. But sometimes I got the feeling that the most they did was dress for dinner. Then a friend mentioned Enzo Village, the Zen-focused continuing care facility planned for Sonoma County. The community was to include a Zendo meditation hall. There would be 20 retired monks in residence to teach and lead workshops. There would be 2 miles of biking paths, acupuncture services, yoga classes, and a curriculum to help train residents in helping each other age. Van Dyke said one of the almost 1,200 people who put down $1,000 to reserve a spot, when the units became available, she secured a two-bedroom flat. And this development won't open its doors until next fall or winter, so she has a few months to wait to move in, but she's certainly found her community. During the panic, she contacted every future resident from San Francisco to Santa Cruz, about 40 people in all, and organized monthly get-togethers. She said, I know all my neighbors now. For developers of senior accommodations, retirees like these people that we've just read about are offering some hope in an industry buffeted by staffing shortages and rising prices, not to mention lingering impact of COVID. COVID was catastrophic for the industry. This spokesman for Aegeus Development, an affiliate of Aegeus Living, which owns and operates high-end assisted living and memory care properties on the West Coast. This business has picked up its properties and geared, some geared to the general public, but others geared for people of Chinese and Asian descent who are concerned about the environment. Or who are concerned about the environment. You can either be Chinese or Asian or be concerned about the environment. They have attracted many inquiries from other developers, and so they opened a consulting affiliate to offer advice on site selection, design, and financing. I think there's going to be demand all over the world, this guy says. You hardly have to convince Terry Witzel of that. The 57-year-old bet her career on the Florida slice of the pie. Back in 2020, she was living in State College, Pennsylvania, and had just been laid off from her job in the automotive industry when her husband dragged her to Florida to check out Buffett's Latitude Daytona. Beyond having heard Margaritaville on the radio, Witzel knew nothing about Jimmy Buffett or his real estate empire and was unenthusiastic about an age-restricted community. I was not ready for 55-plus, she said. I'm thinking wheelchairs and walkers. But when the couple drove around Latitude during the visit, they were so impressed with how friendly everybody was that they bought a cottage on the water. Moving in a few weeks later, Witzel could not have been happier with her new life. You stand in the pool and congregate with the other residents with floaties, she says. It's like kindergarten. So I think you've got a flavor for these niche retirement communities. Some of them sound like they're very interesting. Others, for people that you're not politically aligned with or whatever, probably would be irritating. But I think it's an interesting look at what the future holds for those of us who are going to be looking for more commonality in their neighborhoods, I suppose. Finally, we got a little thing here about Medicare scams. Talk about opposite ends of the spectrum. And it's Tony, our favorite Medicare lady, Tony with an I, because I'm a girl. She says, somebody wrote to her and said, I'm very concerned about a phone call I received yesterday from a representative with Medicare, asking all types of personal questions and informing me there was a new plastic Medicare card with a chip, like a credit card. I told the caller what you said during your online Medicare webinar and for us not to give out personal information over the phone. I am concerned that I could have made a mistake and that I have missed out on the new Medicare card. Would you please advise what I should do or who I should call to see if Medicare is trying to contact me? Sometimes it's hard to know what the right thing to do is when it involves Medicare. And this question was written by Deidre from Sugar Land, Texas. Deidre, don't stress yourself out because there is not a new plastic Medicare card with a chip being issued. This is a new Medicare scam that is targeting America's Medicare population. Your Medicare card is the same card you currently have. Medicare and Social Security will never randomly call your home or office and ask for your personal or banking information. Medicare already has all the information they need about you. If information was needed, a letter would be sent advising you as to what specific government agency, such as Medicare, would need and to contact them for additional information. The Medicare card was updated in 2018 by giving a random identifier that includes numbers and letters and no longer uses your Social Security number. There are no plans to update it at this time. In March, it was reported that over $100 billion a year is being targeted by fraud to the Medicare and Medicaid programs nationwide. Fraud hurts America because when thieves steal from Medicare, there is less money available for health care that one really needs. There is an organization called Senior Medicare Patrol that helps those on Medicare learn how to detect fraud and abuse. So you can call a nationwide Senior Medicare Patrol phone number, 877-808-2468, or visit the website. It's SMP, Senior Medicare Patrol, so it's www.smpresource.org to locate the closest office to you. The website discusses common Medicare fraud schemes, such as COVID-19 genetic testing, hospice, Medicare card scams, and the list goes on. Below are a few tips to help protect you against Medicare fraud. Have a safety script by your phone. Tell anybody, especially scammers, you do not give out personal information to anyone who calls. Get your kids or a friend to help you write your script. Stick to that script no matter what. That seems a little excessive. Never give your Medicare or Social Security number to strangers who call you on the phone or come to your door. Just like you tell your grandkids not to talk to strangers, you need not talk to them either. Play the stranger danger game. And finally, do not accept free offers in exchange for your Medicare number. Remember, there is nothing free. They will have Medicare pay for whatever they are offering, and they will use your Medicare number to get it paid for. Medicare fraud is exploding, and the only way to stop Medicare fraud is to let your friends know what I have just told you. We need to stand together and stop those who only want to make a fast dollar from Medicare, your checking account, your credit card, and most of all, from you. So I agree with that. Let's stamp out Medicare fraud. What do you think, Randy? Which side of that coin are you on? Which side of that subject would your
I definitely want to stamp out Medicare fraud, as well as fraud in many other avenues as well. One of the things you talked about earlier in the podcast was people that are considering buying a spot on these lifelong permanent cruise ships.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Be very careful about those things, because I read an article on the internet just, you know, a day or two ago where some folks have put some really sizable money to secure a spot on one of those ships that was being advertised recently.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what?
The ship sank.
It went down like the tight, the whole, I don't know that it was a scam, but it was very, very poorly managed. And the whole thing went down like the Titanic.
Yeah. I think this was first thought of about 20 years ago. I remember reading that old folks' homes were going to be floating cruise ships, and right, that they would travel around the world, and the cost would be very, very moderate. And so I thought, well, that's a pretty good idea. Now, recently I discovered that the that Medicare, which is good anywhere in the U.S. in possessions, is no good once you're on a ship more than 6 hours from an American port. So if there is medical service on board that ship that is expected to be paid for by your medical insurance, you're going to need some kind of additional travel insurance to cover the times when that ship is more than 6 hours outside of an American port.
That's a great point. You know, I never, of all the reasons that I would never invest in some sort of a scheme like that, I never thought about the Medicare side of it. So that's really good though.
Yeah, I mean, got a ship full of old people. Somebody's going to drop dead, you know, probably every couple of days.
Well, you know, it's interesting because if you look, you know, Margaret and I love to go on cruises.
Uh-huh.
One of the things most people don't know is, you know, if you're on one of those cruise ships where it's got, you know, 3,000 people on it.
Right.
You know, typically in the time that you're on that ship, there's going to be some one, some two, some three, some four people dead that yep. weren't there when weren't that way when they got there.
I know. And if they don't prepare, then it could be a big hit in the wallet, because they might not die, but they may need to be flown someplace to get treatment, to get better treatment than the ship can provide, and that's expensive. It's
yep. I know. It's one of those things you just don't think about. I mean, I love cruising, but there's a lot of things, especially now.
Yeah.
I mean, the bottom line is you can get out in the middle of nowhere and somebody can say, well, you know, we don't want that ship to dock because you've got, you all got a disease. You've got some sort of disease, new disease. And we won't let you dock.
Or you can have Somali pirates joining you, uninvited guests.
I've watched a bunch of YouTube videos about, the people that, protect the ships against the Somali pirates.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I'd want to be a Somali pirate. I'll tell you that.
Well, I'll tell you something. That's a refreshing comment, because I had drinks with a guy in Washington State. I was in Seattle years ago. This guy purported to be the first officer on various cargo ships. And he said, we don't want to be armed. We don't want those pirates any madder at us. And that's just ass backwards thinking. This guy, we all look at each other like, what the hell is this guy? What kind of nut could he be inviting evildoers to come on board his ship without any resistance at all? Give me a few sharpshooters, or, give me something to shoot with, and I'll make sure they don't get that close to the ship.
Yeah, there's one YouTube video that, if you're inclined to watch it, it's a YouTube video that documents that one time when a bunch of Somali pirates took over a ship, and in order for the Somali pirates to leave the rest of the people alone, the captain of the ship agreed to be their hostage.
Uh-huh.
And they took him off the ship, and they were, I think, in one of their life boats,
a Zodiac. I think he was in a Zodiac, as I recall.
Yeah. And bottom line is they brought a bunch of snipers in, and I'm talking, the cream of the cop, the best of the best of the best.
Right.
So that there was like eight people in this Zodiac with this captain.
Uh-huh.
Now, keep in mind, the Zodiac is bouncing along in the water, blah, 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 blah. And they've all the guys have got their rifles trained on the captain.
Right.
Well, they got an equal number of snipers in there.
Yeah.
and basically took all of the six or eight, pirates out simultaneously with shots to the head while the captain was there.
Boy, what a happy story. What a happy ending.
I'm telling you, these snipers. I have read stories about these people are like superhuman.
Well, I'm so glad most of them are on our side. One of the stories that I've always loved was about Sergeant Alvin York, who was the most decorated American soldier in World War I. And there was a point in his illustrious career. Now, he was just a farm boy from rural Kentucky. The whole town had one telephone. You had to go to the store in order to make a phone call. But Alvin York had a bunch of Germans leave their entrenchment and run at him in down a single file path. So all these Germans are running at him. And what he did was he fired at this line of Germans at probably 12 guys running towards him. And then he fired again. And then he fired again. And they kept running because they figured he was just a poor shot and he was missing them. What he was doing was picking off the last guy in line and then the second to the last guy. And the third to the last guy. And by the time he stuck his gun butt in the face of the front guy in line, the front guy thought he was being followed by a bunch of his buddies, but they were all laying on the ground bleeding.
Oh my gosh. I have never heard that. The natural assumption would be getting the front guy.
Yeah.
The front guy gets there and he's it.
He's by himself. Oops. I'm just going to go back to my foxhole now.
Excuse me. I hear my mother call.
This might have been a mistake. I'm sorry, Mr. York.
Oh, excuse me. I need to go back where I came from. Oh, that's a great story. I could. Oh, my God. That's a great story. Well, you know something? Our 75 cents is done.
Yeah. Boy, and I'm not going to fork over another 25 cents to keep it going. So
I know. I tell you, Doug Jones, he's so
the cheapest,
tight-fisted.
Cheapest
so
bastard you ever saw.
You'd think he was Scottish or something. He's so tight-fisted. He can squeeze a nickel so far that, you know, he can make the buffalo take a crap.
Yeah, my brakes are so good. I could stop on a dime and give you 9 cents change.
I know. But I love him. What the heck? So anyway, we need to go ahead and sign off, bring the train into the station. But before I do, there's several things I always mention. One is that don't forget, Doug Jones is your nationwide licensed agent to help you with anything Medicare supplement related. You can reach out to him at dbj@mlmmailbag.com. You can check us out on the website at medicareforthelazyman.com. Or you can buy, you know, we haven't had a sale on your book recently.
No, we could do that. What do you think we ought to do?
Well, I think we ought to put up the normal sale. You know, we're coming into, you know, the 4th of July kind of season. Yeah. I think we ought to do the normal thing. Let's go with buy 6 books.
Uh-huh. Okay, I like it so far.
Yeah, and pay for 6.
Beautiful. Genius.
Genius. I know. It works every year. So we need to have you do us a favor. Go to wherever you can give us a rating on the podcast and the book. We are always up against it, just like the television people up against it with ratings. And without ratings, we don't do nearly as well as we would like to. We're always in the hunt for the top spot in certain categories, and we want to stay there. So we have just spent, in case you haven't checked your watch, 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma. No more. He's living in the high mountains behind Cave Creek, Arizona, in his fortress of solitude. And I told you a couple episodes ago that I would explain when I asked you which way the stairwells curved in your castle.
I had forgotten about that. What's the answer to that?
They curve clockwise. So that people coming upstairs, if you happen to be sitting in your penthouse, that they can't, and most people are right-handed, and back in the day with swords, they couldn't get a sword to curve around the corner to hit you.
You know something? The first time you ever brought this up, I guessed it correctly, and then this time I completely forgot about it.
Now, coming down the stairs, you'd have a perfect shot.
Yeah.
But upstairs, you could not, with a right-handed
attack.
With your fighting
you
right-handed, you couldn't attack from a right-handed position. So that's the reason that you have them. I know you do in your castle.
Yes.
But, you know, your fortress of solitude, but you didn't know why.
No, I didn't. And frankly, the next time you ask me, I may not know why again. But thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next time for sure.